all this silly stuff and you die from that.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing.
Hooks and boys and girls and moms and dads and children of all persuasions and other things that people are all about nowadays, which I don't understand any of it. And we were just kind of discussing the best laid plans of mice and men and how, you know, you go out and you do these extraordinary things, and but you plan them well and you live through it, and then one little mistake and everything can go sideways just in an instant. And speaking of going sideways, this is Fish and Frank in the chair. We got Robert in the chair across from me, and we got RJ in the control center. And things aren't going sideways, but we are going to bring the back tires under control and swing it straight ahead. And trout fishing. Boy, this is a weird mixed year on trout fishing, Robert.
Slightly.
And, you know, for 5 years now, we've been saying, boy, this is a weird year. God, this is a strange year. And each one of them has been different. Yeah. And I would say the biggest difference this year, everybody's going, well, I don't know where to catch fish, and there's no fish here. But with the water at least 10 degrees colder than it was last year in January,
right,
that makes a big difference on where you go and what you do. And you're looking for warmer water in the mornings, which is deep. You're looking for shallow water in the afternoon if we get sunshine. And this week is going to be sunny. So let's do a little trout fishing. What are we talking about with the trout? And what's the weirdest thing about the trout?
The consistent numbers of trout are still along the intercoastal, especially like Captiva and some of the deeper waters.
But how you're fishing for them is not how we fish for trout.
Oh, no. Slow and deep.
It's all about being deep. Guys were catching nice trout, at the Tom Adams Bridge,
yeah,
while fishing for sheephead.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's just how we found the trout down there. If he would have been trout fishing, he would have said there's no trout there.
Right, exactly. You know, he was fishing real close to the pilings and some around the bunks there, and just setting his sinker right on the bottom, and his shrimp just drifting up as close to the structure as possible, but sitting it perfectly still, and that's what he was catching his trout on.
See, now, if you told me that story and it wasn't you guys that I know, I would say, oh, you're full of it. Nobody catches trout on the bottom with a sinker.
Yeah.
And it literally goes to show that there's a lot of fish here. We're just not fishing the way the fish adapted to the colder water.
Right.
If you're looking for these fish, Carl was in the PGI canals, going along, had his side scan going, marked some fish on the side, thought they were black drum because they were big, they were all bunched up on the side of the canal right on the bottom, and put some baits out, crabs, whatever, thought, okay, this is going to be it. Nothing. Guy takes a jig head and a shrimp, sticks it over the side of the boat, and just starts going straight up and down, kind of like if you were ice fishing. And all of a sudden, boom, big fish on, boom, takes off, Jack Crevel.
Yeah.
And they started fishing them basically with an ice fishing technique where he's just jigging the rod straight up and down, and finding these big jacks hugging in the bottom in 8 feet of water and 10 feet of water. And now we're finding trout up at the
Tom Adams
Bridge. And they're down by the bottom, within a foot of the bottom. And again, you're talking 8-10 feet of water there at the center of that bridge, yeah. maybe more. 12.
Yeah.
And so if you're not finding fish, and you're going out fishing in the same place you were fishing last year, doing the same thing, you're right. You're not going to be catching fish. You know,
yeah,
there's no fish there.
There's no fish there. Yeah, exactly.
That would be their exact correct phrase. There's no fish there. Well, I'm here to agree with you. So what we've got to do is find some deeper water. Now, I don't know if those fish would be hanging out at the reef the same way. I kind of doubt it. I don't know. I mean, they should be. It's deep. It's
right.
Literally 12 to 14 feet deep at the reef. are those trout and these other fish hugging the bottom right along the outsides of those reefs?
I think it'd be worth checking.
It might be something to do, and maybe a single drop or double drop rig would be the way to go to try and find some of those fish. Because I think if you're right dead on the bottom, I don't think you're going to get it. But I think if you were up a foot or two off the bottom, maybe that would be the ticket.
Yeah, it might be. I mean, me personally, I'd probably do two ways. You know, I would probably do a shrimp on like a porgy rig or a double drop rig, but raise the shrimp up a foot above my sinker. But I'd also use probably a little bit longer leader. I'd probably use like a 2 foot leader coming off instead of, you know, 6 inches.
On the bottom one, I'll agree, but on the top one, I'm going to shorten it up a bit because I want it to stay up. The longer that leader is, the more tendency it have dropped to the bottom.
Right.
So I want that first one, I'm okay with that one going down to the bottom, a little longer leader. That second one, I'm going to stay 4 to 6 inches off of the main leader just so I know it's going to be up high.
Yeah, good point. You know, and then the other one, I'd probably be using a tandem rig, except for I'd probably vertical jig it almost. I would be keeping it right on the bottom, just a tandem rig curl tail, like the DOA, but I would be very slow hopping it along the bottom, almost like I was pompano or flounder fishing to see if those trout are right there.
That's a good idea. I never thought about that tandem rig. A tandem rig is where you have a swivel and then a longer leader for one of your curl tails and a little shorter leader for your other one, and you're throwing two lures at the same time, and it kind of looks like they're chasing each other as you bring them back in. DOA makes the deadly tandem with a T, and you could bottom bounce that along, and that might be very effective. I've never thought about using it in that manner. I've always just swimmed them.
Right, and that's how I've always used them, but I mean, I see the possibilities of it. I mean, going by the story with the jacks and that guy with the Tom Adams ridge and the colder water, maybe working that curl.
Was he using a porgy rig, double drop at all? Or
he was using a single line porgy rig.
All right. What we're talking about is where your fishing rod comes down and you tie your leader on with a swivel or just line to line. But then as your leader goes all the way down, you have a sinker at the very bottom. And then off of that, usually about a foot to 2 foot off the bottom where the sinker is, you have a leader coming off the side with a hook on it and your bait. The object of this is you're not fishing the bottom, you're not fishing the top, you're literally fishing a foot or two off the bottom where sheephead are not really bottom feeding fish. They're not really surface feeding fish. They like to go around a piling, and with this type of rig, use more weight than normal. You want the heaviest weight your rod can handle so it stays where you put it. You cannot cast this rig. It has to be dropped straight down so you can hold it up vertically. So you're literally holding it up suspended and your bait comes off the side next to the piling. Now, if you were to cast this, and we get this a lot, guys who are going to cast this type of rig out,
right?
You've got to put a little bobber at the top so that the sinker will drag everything to the bottom, and the bottom, this bobber or float, will lift the rig up, but not lift the weight off of the bottom. Does that make sense?
Certainly does.
It'll keep your hook and bait basically suspended up from rather than settling down.
Right. You can take a little foam bobber, cut pieces of it, put the bigger piece at the top, put a little piece on your leader to help float it, and then a heavier sinker, 2 ounces of lead, something that will really keep it down there by the bottom. And you're still going to feel the bite because the hooks and everything are between you and the sinker.
Right. And if you're not familiar with the rig, you know, and if you look it up, it's called a chicken rig or a porgy rig, but a lot of people who are from up north are very familiar with it because it's basically a spreader rig that they would use for crappie and
it's
yellow perch.
Rig. Yeah. It's a crappie perch rig is where it all started off of.
Absolutely.
All right. But with this colder water, we know there's a bunch of trout out there. So if I'm going to think of some places, I'm going to think up in front of Harbor Heights. We've got 14, 15 feet of water there in front of Harbor Heights. It shallows up a little bit to 6-8 foot. And then that first curve north of Harbor Heights where the power lines are, you get a real narrow little spot, and then it goes around a big curve going towards the left. on the outside of that, you've got anywhere from 12 to 18 feet of water. I think some of those fish might be hiding down there.
Absolutely. I mean, there were some good reports of them a couple weeks ago, and then I've had a couple scattered reports this week of them up there. I have a question, though, for you, because you just brought this up with those holes. Why is it that those holes there on the river, and that's a pretty wide stretch across that river, it's not like a narrow spot, why is it those 12 and 14-foot holes hold whiting trout on a fairly regular basis throughout this time of year? Why do they hold fish versus, say, the 20-foot holes out in the harbor? What's the significant correlation that, for some reason, you don't ever really hear those fish being caught out there? And a lot of guys go out there and try to fish those holes in the harbor.
Well, the holes in the middle of the harbor are very exposed, and they're very shallow bowls. They drop down 4-6 feet more than the rest of the harbor, but it's a very big, wide area. In places like on the river, in the intercoastal waterway, you've got a very small area with more vertical walls on them. There's more of a hiding spot. So you're going along, you got 6 feet of water, and all of a sudden it drops down to 12 or 18.
So it's like more of a swimming pool effect rather than a spoon effect.
Well, it's more like a foxhole effect. It's a place they can actually hide. If you're out in the bottom in, like, say, the 20-foot hole, and you're a fish just sitting there, any fish swimming by within, I would say, 200 feet can see you hanging out there.
Right.
And decide, okay, I want to eat you. But in a more defined hole, like on the river or in some of these other areas, there's the bottom's more irregular, and it's not just a big, flat, sandy, deep spot. Where the tarpon would like it is because any crab, shrimp, or whatever trying to cross that area are very exposed. And these are not bottom fish. They're fish that are moving, feeding. So anything in that area is very exposed, and when creatures go, if they're not strong swimmers like a shrimp or something like that, they're probably, as they're going forward, going to drift down into along the, you know, they're like a race car going on the curved racetrack. It holds its momentum by going very fast, but if you have a car that's going a lot slower, it could literally slide down the track. You see what I mean?
Right.
Or if you're on a tilted roadway all covered in ice, you're trying to walk along this way, but you're slowly slipping down the embankment as you walk across.
Right.
And I would think the shrimp, other stuff like that, because they're not going to be strong swimmers, small crabs and shrimp, as they're going along, would work them not only forward, but sideways down that slope to end up in those deeper areas, more of a concentration of food. But because it's not like, all right, all the water's 8 feet, and then it drops into a hole, it's a very gradual slope into that hole. So if you're anywhere around the edges, you're overlooking it like a giant valley.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
I think shadow-wise, too, a shallow depression doesn't have much in the way of shadows. Even when the sun is almost setting or almost rising, is very... But a drop-down hole, half of the hole is going to be in shadow all the time, no matter where the sun is.
Better hiding spots.
Better hiding spots, right.
So, great point.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point.
Yeah.
And that makes sense.
Brings up a thought I was having about why the fish aren't where we think they are, and they're in the deeper holes because of the cold, right? But I think we've also had lots and lots of cloud cover the last couple of weeks.
That's why the water's so cold.
And I don't know if the cloud cover has something to do with keeping the fish off the flats or keeping the fish where they are, or does it drive them deeper? I mean, I don't understand.
100%. The cloud cover has everything to do with why the fish are deep. Because on a bright sunny day like today, we got the sunshine hitting the flats. And we call it sunshine, but it's actually solar radiation. And what it does is when it hits something, it warms it up. Any dark object in bright sunlight is going to become warm. But when you have cloud cover, there is no warmth from the sun. The air is still warm because it's overall of the earth. But the water really takes a lot more to warm up. So without that direct bright sunlight to, like putting a black piece of paper, a white piece of paper on the ground, that black piece of paper gets warm much quicker, much warmer. The grass grew better in the shallow waters because of the rainy summer we had. What kept the red tide from ever coming in the harbor also killed the vast majority of the grass. Grass needs three things: a place to grow, food, nutrients, and sunshine. They need to do photosynthesis. Well, with all the water, the runoff we had this summer, it was so murky, so muddy, the sunlight can only penetrate down a few inches. If that grass was in 3 feet, 4 feet of water, it got no sunlight for months. There's no plants can live under that conditions. So you have a lot of barren bottom that's just now starting to grow some grass after a few months of clear water. It takes like 3 months. And so the very shallow areas on a bright sunny day, anywhere where there's dark grass left, is going to act as a solar collector. It's going to get warm. Those fish are going to move into that spot. But when the day's cloudy, there's no reason to come up there because that water is cold. So the cloudy weather is exactly why trout, many of these other fish, are not on the flats. It's air temperature water. That's just really cold.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. And this morning even more so, because we had a pretty low tide this morning with that northeasterly wind the last couple of days and a normal low tide the way it was. I had 5 feet of dirt off of my seawall this morning.
Oh, yeah, it was way down.
So that also cools the water down even more so on the flats and overall once it comes back up, because that ground is actually chilled to air temperature. And then that really keeps that under the surface water even that much cooler.
Well, what happens is the deeper the water is, believe it or not, that deeper water, surface water moves more than water down low, but that below the down 6 feet, it stays a much more even temperature. When water moves, it's going out of the canal and coming back into the canal, but water is really peculiar. If you were to put a metal plate across there, it would move at the same pace, all of it, the top, bottom, everything. It moves out and moves back in. So that bottom water, even though it is moving, is not mixing with the surface water that much. So that more than 6 feet of water stays warmer, takes a lot longer to change that temperature than it does the surface. The shallower the water, the more the temperature varies. And that's part of the problem. But I want to get into some wind effect here in a minute. But right now, jumping things, bass fishing seems to be pretty good right now. I mean, I'm hearing lots of stories about bass.
Yeah, it's definitely still been very consistent. You know, a lot of fish are still in that kind of pre-spawn mode with a couple of areas where they're in post-spawn. But shiners, you know, a lot of guys buying shiners.
We're going through so much gambler lures. It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
the gambler soft plastics, the Strike King stuff. It's going crazy. What's finally catching on is the DOA freshwater baits.
Yeah. That little snake.
Well, he's also got those worms.
Yeah.
And they're finally taking a little bit of a foothold. I don't know how unique or how special they are, but one thing we learned, we had a pen day yesterday, and that pen day was all about Berkeley products and pure fishing. So it's Berkeley, Shakespeare, Penn, just Johnson, I mean, a huge array of stuff, Fenwick and all these other ones. But we found out that Mark Nichols always infuses, like, in the DOA shrimp, it's always, if it looks like a shrimp, it has ground up shrimp in the plastic. And if it looks like a fish, it has ground up bait fish in the plastic. But you can take some Berkeley Gulp, that juice from like the alive things or a little bit out of your bags. If you put that in a jar, don't put any kind of plastic in with Gulp besides Gulp. But you can take some DOA shrimp and drop them in a separate jar with some of that Gulp juice in them. And because of the natural bait in the DOA lures, it will absorb some of that gulp stuff. And in fact, making it have more enzymes and more of the stuff that actually the fish go for.
Yeah, I can see that.
Where if you have a normal plastic, it's all plastic. And plastic is not a great absorber.
No.
So you get an exterior smell on it, but it can't actually absorb into it. Where any of the DOA products, you can use, we're making a deal getting bait mate back. It's a old-fashioned scent that we used to sell a ton of back right. in the 90s. And now we found the company, got talking to them, we're going to be getting the stuff in again. But you could look, put them like in the bait mate, in the gulp juice. You could make these DOAs have more of an internal smell, more of the enzymes in there that catch the fish.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of your scents are good for an added attractant, but some of the technologies with these chemists, you know, they can actually persuade or whatever, intrigue the fish to actually chew just because of the enzymes that are in it, not the actual fish smell itself.
Yeah, it was just something weird about the DOA and stuff. I know it's a random thought, but going back into this, bluegills in yeah. freshwater. Now, it's been 5 years anyway since we've really heard much about bluegills.
Yeah, it's odd. This past week...
RJ, can you remember the last time you heard about somebody, okay, I caught a mess of bluegills or something?
It's got to be 10 years, easy.
Easy.
Easy 10 years when it was something you brought back a lot of.
And this is the first season we're really hearing much about bluegills.
Yeah, and it's added bycatch because the guys are actually targeting crappie and catching some pretty good size, you know, relatively speaking, bluegill, you know, hand size and a little better than that. And they're eating their minnows, which is not always unheard of, but less commonly heard of with them eating minnows. It's usually predominantly worms.
But they've been hitting a lot of the minnows.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this brings me to a thought. Excuse me. Robert and I were coming up in the truck and heading to the show. And the Mayan cichlids, all of the non-native species, the tilapias, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da, there's just so many of them in the waterways now. I'm almost beginning to believe that the bluegills were pushed back because of all these invasive species to near extinction levels in a lot of the canals. I think the bluegills modified the way they eat. I think they've changed their feeding habits because I think in their face was just so many fry, so many tiny baby cichlids, so many baby tilapia, so many baby of all these things. Just clouds and clouds of little minnows that they started feeding on these non-native fish as right. in their fry form, in the tiny stuff. And that would bring about a change. It would bring them back to an apex predator. It's going to make them hit the minnows that we're putting in the water as bait. It's going to bring them back and have them overpower some of these non-native species simply by eating them.
Yeah, and it's very possible, you know, because you got, when an animal, you know, basically the same way with humans, you got a fight or flight thing, and when an animal starts to dominate, it will push a native species out, or even a non-native species, it can make them move out into an uninhabitable area and have a profound effect on killing them off, or that animal starts to adapt to living in that particular spot now. And that might have been part of the bluegills thing, is that it morphed into moving out to a little bit deeper habitat and sustained but didn't really flourish, but then realized it's got to, in order to flourish, change its food habits and come back into those shallows and start attacking some of those smaller non-native fish.
Yeah, and I think it sounds like, too, with the bluegills, as they evolved, they adapted to this situation. They started eating all this small fry because it was all the way around them. So number one, they were knocking down some of the populations. But two, they weren't competing for the same food anymore. They didn't have to fight over who's eating all the worms and grubs and stuff off the bottom, which is all the non-native species have been pretty much eating. So that makes some sense to me that could have been going on. They've adapted. They found a new source of food that they're not being competed with to eat that food, and so their population flourished again.
And we've seen this, and what brought it into my head about this was on the Peace River, one time I took Robert up to Iron Lake, Aaron Lake, Hancock Lake, one lake, three or four different names, but it's way up past Horse Creek on the Peace River. And there was so many armored catfish up there that year that we put landing nets out the side of the boat. Just, we were doing competitions. So you could just idling the boat forward, not actually going after them, just holding the nets in the water, idling forward. We were catching by one after the other, just idling forward. They're so thick with them. And now the snook eat them, the tarpon eat them, bass eat them. Everything up there is eating these tiny, if they can get big, they can avoid most, a lot of the predators. But until they're 10 inches long, they're literally food for everything. And over the last few years, I don't see them up there the way I did. You see a couple along the bank here and there, but the huge, massive numbers are gone. And FWC does what, the electric up there, Robert?
Yeah, they do a lot of the electric sampling, but they also do some of the net sampling. And over the last 10 years, they've found, because they'll actually pump the stomachs out of some of the fish. They don't actually kill the snook or the redfish that they catch. They'll actually just stick a hose in it and flush out their stomach, basically cause them to puke it up and try to check some of the stomach contents. And they're eating those armored catfish on a fairly regular basis. And it seems to go in little spurts throughout the whole year where it'll be a two-month period where they're eating them, and then there's a two-month period without any, and then another two-month period where they're eating them. And it doesn't seem
like me with pizza.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to correlate.
I go through and I'm going to have pizza,
Yeah, I'm tired of pizza. Let's go get hot dogs.
And then, nah, I don't want to, Yeah, hot dogs, man. I don't know why, but I'm a hot dog freak. Love hot dogs. I mean, my favorite's the Gwaltney.
Yes. Yes.
I don't care. We've done test after test. The cheapest hot dog you can buy, to me, tastes better than any of them. And I've done that time and time again. Tell people, here, try this. Okay, what is that? Oh, it's a whatever. And, oh, yeah, that's excellent, man. That's a Gwaltney. They're like a buck something a package.
And you can fish with them, too.
And you can fish with them. Yep, they're made of chicken. I would have never thought I'd like a chicken hot dog. But I think that kind of plays, I know it's a weird, that's a Fish and Frank thing, my head just, can you imagine what it's like living in here?
Oh, God, no.
No, it's tough enough living outside of it, trying to figure it out.
Oh, God. But it's kind of, I think fish and everything else is a little bit like us.
Yeah.
They get urges and cravings, and you need different nutrients and vitamins and stuff. And you stand in front of the refrigerator looking, you know you need something, but you have no idea what it is. But you know it's not that.
Yeah, yeah. I think the same thing happens with fish, depending on what time of year it is and what they're doing. They do need different nutrients. They're getting ready for spawn. When we're done with the spawn, they need something else. So this is the stuff that makes the difference between a fisherman and somebody who's going fishing. These bits of information that we keep putting out, this moves you into the next echelon of fishing.
I was working with a guy this morning who threw lures, but he wasn't a lure fisherman. We spent some time this morning talking about some different aspects of stuff. He's like, really?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, these are the things you got to do. If you want to get into lures, this is where you have to be to go on to that next level besides kind of catching a fish whenever it random happens. So I didn't mean to interrupt you. What was the rest of that thought?
Well, that's my point. Anybody can catch a fish, but as you start to absorb this information, cloudy skies, water temperature, putting your lure in something else to give it some more scent. All of these things add up to,
like, as Bert said in Tremors 2, critical need to know information.
That's right.
And if you're going to fight worms, it's one thing, but when you're fighting, I forget, shriekers, it's a whole nother.
That's right.
All right, I'm going to call Danny, our Shimano guy, and hopefully this will all work. Shimano's going to be doing a seminar. Can you hear that?
Yeah.
Okay. Shimano is going to be doing a seminar on...
Hold on just a second.
All right, you're live on the radio, buddy, so watch what you say, man.
I got you. Yep. Just give me a second to get the mic up. And my microphone and my plug into my phone.
All right.
So I think it's clear.
That coming out okay? All right.
Yes.
Fish and Frank here, Robert over there, RJ over there. We got some seminars coming up at Fish and Frank's with Shimano. That's what, February 13th?
Yeah, February 13th. It's a Wednesday, so I think you're going to have them going on all day, aren't you?
Yeah. We got 9:30 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, and 6 o'clock at night. And you're going to be talking and giving some seminars with me and Robert. The three of us are going to be doing it. We got Captain Danny Latham joining you. What's your favorite fish to fish for?
I'm a snook guy. I spent decades fishing offshore, tore my back up, tore my knees up, and just a recent convert. So I've been fishing with Danny and fishing up here in my home water in Tampa Bay, and I just love snook fishing. So right now, it's not a good time for me. All this cold weather.
No, it really hurts. So we assume you're going to be doing a little bit about snook, and Danny's probably going to be doing redfish, because we know how Danny is with redfish. Any other fish you enjoy talking about?
Well, we got trout fishing. We'll tease people a little bit. It's kind of early, but we'll probably tease them up a little bit, because you are the tarpon capital of the world. So we ought to talk about that. And there's a pretty good Goliath grouper fishing, and if I know Robert, we won't be able to help but talking about sharks a little bit.
Okay. Now, one of the things about this is you are the Shimano guy, so we're going to have Shimano reels and rods and product stuff and Power Pro and all that kind of stuff, and do you think you're going to be running any kind of specials or deals that day?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We'll be doing tent-like pricing, you know, tent sale-like pricing at the on that day. That day only, because I'll be there. And but we're gonna everything that you know, all our favorites, our CI4s, our regular Stratix, down to the Sienna reels that you guys sell a lot of. All of that stuff we'll have some special pricing available. So come on into the store and.
What we're going to be doing with the seminar is talking about catching these fish and blending it with the right type of reel or rod action or drag class or speed, however it works, to try and make it better and increase your catch rate ratio, because if you're using the right type of products, you don't want a parabolic rod if you're snook fishing against the mangroves. And you don't want too tight a rod if you're fishing trout on the flats. Having the right tackle and gear for the right fish makes a big difference.
Yeah, that's kind of the cool thing about most of us major manufacturers is we've got products to fit every style of fishing. If you're a topwater guy, we've got that action that Frank was talking about, that where twitching the bait is pretty effortless. You know, if you're going to live bait fish, which is very prevalent in our area, in this, you know, when the bait's available, we've also got those more parabolic actions.
And you're a West Coast, you're a Florida West Coast guy. You live here, so you understand the fishing here. You actually do it and live it. So you're not like coming in from Nebraska, going, "Oh yeah, I love to fish this," but you only get to do it once every 20 years. You actually live here.
Oh, I know, and I'm addicted. I live over on the west side, on the east shore of Tampa Bay, and we call it the South Shore area. And we have it is so much fun exploring all the nooks and crannies and things. And a lot of my offshore experience crosses over, so that's been good. The learning curve hasn't been as steep. I'm still learning tides and you know things like that. I'm eating it up. I just love it.
It's going to be a pretty mixed up seminar. We're going to get a little bit of a lot of fish, how to catch stuff, how to work stuff, how to use stuff, what kind of tackle to use. And Robert, you got any questions for Dan?
No, I think it's going to be a plethora of information and some interesting learning.
So there's going to be four of us doing the seminar, so it ought to be interesting. So you think you're going to interrupt me often enough to get a word in?
Me?
No, not
anybody.
Robert. I did one of the radio shows a couple years ago, I think it was, when you were you had each manufacturer on do their little segment. I found a way to get a couple words in every once in a while.
All right. Well, so you're going to be there February 13th at Fish and Frank's, and you got
your all day
Shimano stuff, and what you can call the bait shop, reserve seats, and even if you don't want to attend the seminars, you can still get the deals and stuff to show up that day, right?
That's correct. We'll have it out. We'll have it all spread out. Like I said, we'll special pricing all day long. All right. And
the deals are going to start at 9 o'clock in the morning, go till 8 o'clock when we close.
So, sounds good. I'm excited. I can't wait. I'm only a couple weeks away.
All right. Well, I just wanted to check in. We were chatting on the phone. I'm ordering some reels for a guy. So anyway, well, thank you, Dan. We look forward to seeing you February 13th, man.
Sounds good. We'll see you later, Robert.
See you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. I was just chatting with him because I had to order some reels for a guy. Wanted some bait cast reels, so... That was kind of interesting. But he's the guy who's going to be there from Shimano. He's absolutely awesome. If you've been to the last 3 years at Tent Sale, Danny is the guy who's been in the booth. You're going to enjoy him. He's a lot of fun. I mean, he actually got me to buy Shimano again. So, you know, I mean, the guy's got to be awesome.
Well, and that being said, with the seminars that you're doing, I know you're having these manufacturers coming there, but the biggest part is that we're talking about not just their products. We're really talking about fishing certain species too, so the knowledge it can be gained, even if you're not a fan of that particular brand of product, the knowledge it can still be gained. If you don't show up because you don't like that brand, you're losing knowledge about some species or some technique of fishing that can be utilized in any other manner possible.
Well,
that you might
try. You don't
try.
Have to buy the rods. Nobody's saying buy this or buy that. You can if you want to. If you like that brand, whatever the brand happens to be each week. Next week is Reaper Rods. We got Tim, the owner of Reaper, and we got his number two man, Austin. They're going to be there with us. We're going to be doing all different stuff. Tim loves redfish. That's February 6th coming up with Reaper. But what you're learning about is how to catch these fish. And what the manufacturers do is explain different stuff, and whether it's their product or somebody else's, it's the way to do it, how you can use it, how you catch fish. That's where the cool part comes in. Anyway, getting into offshore, Robert, does anybody really have a clue what's going on out there, or is it just going to be, okay, flip a quarter and... What do you think, good or bad? Let's start with RJ. RJ, nobody's been out there hardly at all.
It's windy, cold, rainy, nasty. Is anybody out there? Anybody that's gone out there, have they actually come back?
I don't know. Maybe that's why we don't
have any
reports.
That's why you're not hearing anything, right?
Yeah. They go out, but they don't come back. Hotel California, Gulf of Mexico.
Right, exactly. I've had one guy go out, which surprised me. They went out on Tuesday. And he said it wasn't bad. He said it was a little sporty, but it wasn't bad. But 4 foot plus is pretty bad to me, and that's what he said it was. And the crazier part is he's only in a 23-foot bay boat. They went out to 80 feet of water.
In a 23-foot bay boat and four-footers?
In four-footers. I told him he was out of his mind.
Yeah, and he said it's not that bad out there. That just meant he didn't die.
Yeah, he didn't die.
That was as close as you got to not bad.
Right, and like Danny was talking about, you know, wrecking your knees and your back from fishing offshore all the time.
Right.
This guy probably did a real good job on all of his joints.
Oh, absolutely. And the funny part was he was saying that they caught one legal grouper and the snapper bite was pretty slow. And I'm like, how did you anchor? He said, we couldn't. So you were drifting it. 6 to 8 knots. You know, that's probably part of the problem.
Yeah, the bait's moving faster than the fish is willing to go.
Wow, I think that was a bait just went by.
Yeah. Yeah, what was that?
It's faster than you troll.
You know,
you're not going to slow down. Even putting drift anchors out would be all right, but God, that's...
Yeah, that was beyond my understanding.
That's almost being as dumb as a football player.
I was going to say that, but I kind of bit my tongue.
Yeah, it's politically incorrect, but, you know.
No, it's...
You don't anchor up off the stern, and when you get things get bad, you don't try and retrieve your anchor. You just get your little butt to shore in one piece.
Right.
So,
you know, the offshore has been so quiet because of the lousy weather, but these next several days...
the forecast, Robert. What's going to be where? What are you thinking?
The wind's supposed to die down over the next several days, and it's supposed to be 80 degrees come Monday. You know, it's supposed to be a really pretty nice.
So instead of a fishing forecast, they get a weather forecast.
Well,
we're going to call him Weatherman Robert.
That being said, with the wind laying down and the weather being nice, you're going to have a lot of fish that are hungry because, you know, it's going to be calming seas. A lot of people will be out there fishing them, and since nobody's been fishing them all week, I think the snapper and the grouper are going to cooperate fairly well over the next several days.
I'm thinking with a lack of pressure, nothing going on out there for almost 2 weeks now in reality.
Yeah.
Because we've had very limited time over the last
few
weeks.
Very small windows.
I literally think it's going to go on fire.
I think so, too.
Because usually once you give everything a break and they don't have sinkers and stuff flying in front of their faces every day, it tends to go on a little bit. So the first couple of days, I think are going to be, the first day is going to be okay, but that second and third day, I think that's when it's going to really go. When's the weather going to straighten up? Sunday?
Saturday, actually.
Saturday.
Yeah, the wind's subsiding this afternoon, supposedly, which that's always meh. But Saturday's supposed to be, I think, what, 79 degrees?
Mm.
And less than 8 mile-an-hour winds is what they were forecasting for Saturday.
Right. So it's on like Donkey Kong this weekend, guys. It's going to be a race to see who finds that big fish first.
Yeah.
Let's see. I know I was coming back something. I can't remember what the heck it was.
Tides.
Oh, the tides. Shot Harbor. And pretty much the intercoastal up to Lemon Bay. Let's take this from a sterile, even the 10,000 islands, and all the way on up to Tampa Bay. On the west coast of Florida, you know, that runs kind of north and south, generally. No, not perfectly, I get that. But general aspect north and south. So if we get wind out of the west, we get more water. If we get winds out of the east, we get less water. If you've ever heard of a hurricane stacking effect, okay, the hurricane's coming in and the water builds up and then builds up and then builds up. It's kind of impactful along the shoreline, but any place you have a pass, like Boca Grande Pass, Gasparilla, Captiva, Redfish, Tampa Bay, wherever there's a pass, Stump Pass, the water, if it's blowing out of the east, northeast, southeast, anything with east in it, is going to be blowing the water out. And when it's going through a little pass, when there's more water inside that has to go through a small area, what it's doing is going through a small area being blown out. And as the tide tries to come back in, the wind is still blowing the water out. Kind of like if you have a slanted driveway and you got a garden hose, and you've got it under pressure, you keep a bunch of water up there, and then you quit with the hose, and all that water falls down. Well, the wind keeps that water being blown out. East, northeast, southeast, it's all blowing out. So as the water tries to come in, it cannot get back in. Maybe half of what should come in comes in. But as it blows, the tide goes out, the wind blows it out even more. It goes out faster, so the water gets lower and lower and lower. The longer and harder the wind blows in one direction, the more effect this has. If it's just a one-day thing, it's not really that drastic. But if it goes on all day, all night, the water gets even lower and lower and lower. And that's what happens at this time here. Now, isn't February like one of the lowest tides of the entire year for us?
Yeah, usually the new moon and especially the full moon of February is our lowest tide of the year. That blood moon that we had in January, that might top it, but that was an eclipse. So sometimes when you have those weird solar effects, that can play a little different game in it. But traditionally speaking, February is our lowest tides of the year, not including the weather involved with it. Just
so
normal.
We're
going to
have
low tide.
Literally 8 to 10 inches less water in the flats just because it's February.
Correct.
Not because the wind's blowing or not blowing or it's coming out of the east or coming out of the west. Just because it's February, we're going to have 8 to 10 inches less water than we will in, say, a month and a half.
Correct. And the best way to relate that to people is like you have the shortest day of the year with the sun and then you have the longest day of the year with the sun. It's the same effect. You know, it's the axis of the earth creates that pull, because tides are strictly one, you know, they're affected solely by the moon and the lunar pole. Wind has an extra effect on it. So that's okay. Where it comes into play.
If you heard that dinging, I was actually getting a text from my son, and he lives in Wisconsin, and it's minus 32, according to his dashboard. What's he doing?
First of all, what's he doing in a car at minus 32?
He's military. He's got to go when he's got to go.
Yeah.
Well, and I get the military part, but anyone else that's driving up there is out of their mind, because from what I heard, all the bars are closed up there.
I don't know where they go, but he's married with kids.
But he's military, so I mean, yeah. I understand that. But
yeah, the bars closed because the beer was freezing in the trucks.
It was front page news.
Really?
The beer was freezing in the delivery trucks.
Is that what it was?
Deliver, yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, of course, a bar won't stay open for more than a day without deliveries. So there you
go. Not in Wisconsin.
Certainly not in Wisconsin.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, minus 32 degrees. Oh, my gosh.
I've been in minus 5.
He's about ready for a new car. This one's got 124,000 miles on it. I'm looking at that going, geez.
Give us more information than we thought. He's doing over the speed limit, too, isn't he?
No, it looks like he's around 60. So, but, yeah, wow, minus 32.
Can have
so.
That.
What's
no,
that?
They can have that.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Not me.
I live close to the equator for a reason.
Yeah. No. Wow.
I just feel bad for anybody up there.
Yeah. Frank can just go through that.
Being
this
safe.
Frank is fine where he's at. Love you, kid. Yeah, you can come visit Dad. He ain't going up there. Hey. Let's see. Trout, Lemon Bay, Captiva, Whidden Bay, Sheephead. Is the Sheephead bite still going on?
It has been. You know, the sheep's head have been pretty good. The weird part is that it seems to have slowed down just a little bit, but I think that's more weather-related. Like at the phosphate duck, I've had very little reports these last couple of days, and I think that's just wind causing that. But the Tom Adams Bridge still doing well. All the little oyster bars in some of the creeks and canals over in the Placida area. I'm starting to get a few more reports up on Alligator Creek and Eljo Bean. They're just starting to pick up a little bit. Is it hot the way it should be? Absolutely not. But it is definitely starting to pick up. So it's worth stopping at those places if you happen to be in a boat. Stop by the Alligator Creek Reef on your way down. Stop at the Cape Hayes Reef or Danger Reef or any of the other oyster bars along that way. And see how it works out. And if you're fishing from shore and you happen to be leaving the Northport, Port Charlotte area, stop at Eljo Bean, check things out. If nothing's going on, be prepared to drive out to the Placida or Inglewood area. And that's where your better fishing has been consistent for them. The only thing I have heard that's been totally strange and out is the jetties up in Venice. I've talked to several people that have been up there. They've said there's very few anglers fishing it, and they're seeing very few sheep's head. So I don't know if these anglers who used to fish it and fish it well passed away or what's going on up there, but I'm just not getting a lot of feedback from the jetty up there, which is a little strange because that's usually a happening spot right now. Well, I mean, you're almost having to hip check people off of your rock. If you move from that spot, somebody else is wanting to jump right on it.
Yeah. I mean, for years, that was the spot to go up there in the jetties. But, you know, it happens a lot. I actually had a woman call up, and they had to hand me the phone because they had no idea what she was talking about. She wanted jumpers.
Oh.
And they were going out fishing for bluegill, and do you have any jumpers?
Yeah.
And none of the people at the store really understood what she's talking about because it happened to be Austin and somebody else. They're too young. When every fish down here, if you're going to go bass fishing, bluegill fishing, crappie fishing, you should take a bag of frozen shrimp with you.
Oh, absolutely.
I peel the shell off of the tail and cut a little piece of shrimp meat off and put that on the hook. Every fish here grows up eating shrimp. Whether it's a freshwater fish, or saltwater fish. All of the lakes in Florida, almost every river, almost every lake, 90-some percent of them, are full of freshwater grass shrimp or ghost shrimp, whatever you want to call them.
There's actually a lot of different species of shrimp worldwide in freshwater and saltwater.
It's literally amazing how many shrimp are in the lakes all through South Florida, from Tampa south. As you get from I-4 north, this starts to decrease. As you go from I-4 south, it increases. Changing the weather, habitat, mineral content, whatever, water. But jumpers are a big part. And what a jumper is literally the tiny freshwater shrimp. Now, years ago, we used to sell a lot of them. And then it just kind of faded out of fashion. Thinking about carrying them again, but what we always have carried is what people think of the past crab nets, those white mesh nets with the 6-foot handle on them. That is actually a jumper net. Those are for catching little grass shrimp. You take that net and you go right along the shoreline, right in the grass, and you go through and that just get a net full of kind of grass, and then the hard part comes. You're picking out almost each blade of grass and shaking it over something, looking for these little tiny itty-bitty shrimp. And Mustad makes a little black fine wire hook that's awesome for the jumpers because it doesn't break them apart. And you want a number 8 or a number 10. It's a little tiny bait. Excellent for catching fish, though. And what you're doing is, if you don't want to go through all the thing about catching the jumpers, do all that, put a piece of peeled shrimp meat on your hook. Not with the shell on it. They don't like the shell, but they like that soft meat from the shrimp.
Absolutely. It worked extremely well, and the variety of fish that will hit those little shrimp and the frozen shrimp is pretty amazing. But even if you want to go one step further and put a big chunk of shrimp on there, you've got a lot of freshwater catfish here that are great eating that a lot of people don't utilize that resource in a lot of areas.
I was thinking about crappie and bluegill, which they don't have that big a mouth, so I wanted a smaller piece. But for largemouth bass, you put the whole shrimp tail on there. For catfish, bowfins, gar, you name it, they all grow up eating shrimp. And people don't realize that.
Right.
It's a forgotten fact.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately, with my brain, the only facts that I forget are the ones that are important. Other than that, talk about useless nonsense, man, I can tell you about everything. So, we've been trying to get everything figured out. The best advice we can give you if you want to catch fish, fish deep in the morning, fish shallow in the afternoon, as long as it's sunny. If it's cloudy out, fish deep all day.
Yeah, absolutely. Give those fish a chance to warm up throughout the day and become a little bit more active, because that's what they're doing.
Well, Fish and Frank here in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, RJ running the controls. Want to say goodbye, RJ?
Goodbye, RJ.
Robert?
Goodbye, Robert.
See, Henny Youngman lives in the Fish and Talk radio show. Bye.
I said, fish, fish, fish. Boy, I'm going fishing just to ease my mind.